CIUT 89.5 FM, celebrating 35 years as the sound of your city. Proudly student and listener-supported community radio.
Point five. There I am. I heard myself. I must be on air. This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to talk to Tamara Lorenz, a peace activist focusing primarily on NATO. She has been in Europe. She's been to Russia recently, and we commend her for that. We're going to be talking to her. And that also in Quebec, there's been a nice development, one that would thrill Charles Roach, the great Canadian lawyer who never wanted to take an oath to the royals, and the National Assembly of Quebec has decided that members of that assembly do not have to swear an oath. It doesn't seem to be widely reported or talked about in what we call the ROC, the rest of Canada, but we'll be talking to the publisher, Robin Philpott, about this. We've been on this matter for some years, actually. We used to speak to Charles Roach, now deceased, great lawyer, I'll repeat, and a Pan-Africanist, and we spoke to him about this subject of the oath over the years, and what was it the poet said, they found out that in the French, the Acadians, years and years ago, would not swear to the an oath, but they would swear at the oath. That feeling is a common, a widespread sentiment, particularly when the subject of multiculturalism comes up, the makeup of Canada, its transition in population, etc. It's a touchy subject, so we have been following it, and we will continue to follow it. But today we're going to get some details on how this happened and what will happen next, because it sounds like what Canadians brace themselves for, a constitutional issue. And if there's one thing nobody wants to hear about, it's the Constitution. If it's going to be debated and voted, and it turns into kind of a period of political coma in the country. While we're waiting for to speak to Tamara, I just mentioned it's also news from Peru. The news is actually that the people are not happy with the right-wing Congress of Peru having taken power. There are big demonstrations in cities along Peru. And again, it's not reported here, but it ought to be. And we'll talk about that later. But I think we're joined by Tamara Lorenz. Are you there, Tamara?
Yes, I am here, Phil. Thank you.
It's really great to be talking to you. Hey, we want to say right at the top, it seems to me you're doing what I wish our government would do, which is engage with the rest of the world about how to make it less dangerous. And subjects like Canada's role in NATO and NATO's role in the current, I'm going to call it conflict, Ukraine-Russia. You have recently traveled to Eastern Europe, attending a conference, I believe, in Bucharest. So could you talk to us about the whole thing?
Yes, Phil. So I went to Egypt to attend the climate summit. I was there for my doctoral research and also on the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom delegation. And when I was planning my trip to Egypt for the climate conference, I realized that I could get a direct flight from Cairo to Moscow. And I decided to plan a trip to go to Russia. And then I went to Finland, Latvia, Poland, and Romania. So I was in six countries for 4 weeks. I worked very hard every day. I got up early and I scheduled meetings with people, and I went to to see NATO bases in the different countries. I gave talks at various places. I went to see significant cultural sites. I tried to do as much listening and learning as possible, and it was really a profound and transformative experience. I went with the intention to learn more about the conflict in Ukraine, the war that's there, from different perspectives, to also learn about NATO expansion in the region, and to find ways to build peace across the countries, and to figure out how we can cooperate on our global challenges of the climate crisis and poverty and inequality. So, and you know, like you said in your introductory remarks, I was doing something that the Canadian government has failed to do. So before February 24th, in the year prior, the Canadian government refused to meet with their Russian counterparts about this conflict in Ukraine. And there was a open invitation from Moscow to the Canadian government to send officials to come to the Russian capital and to engage in a dialogue and try to figure out a resolution. But the Trudeau government didn't send anybody. The Russians said to the Canadians, look, we will send people to Ottawa. And Trudeau never extended an invitation. And our top diplomat, our foreign affairs minister, Melanie Joly, you know, refused to meet with her Russian counterpart, Lavrov. And that really should tell Canadians something, that our government was refusing to engage in diplomacy and instead escalated this conflict, started to send, you know, special forces and more weapons and warships and more soldiers into Ukraine, into Eastern Europe before the 24th. So it's, you know, Canada wanted this conflict with Russia in Ukraine. You know, this is terrible for our country. It's terrible for the Ukrainians. Terrible for Russia. Terrible for the whole world. And so I wanted to go to engage in people-to-people diplomacy and to listen to the Russians, to hear their perspective, because it's a perspective that is denied to us by the Canadian government and by our Canadian media. Russian voices are completely shut out. And I wanted to understand their perspective. And then I also wanted to find, you know, what are those creative ways that we can start building peaceful relationships, because the other thing that's so important for people to realize is that, you know, a new Cold War, a new arms race are wars that we're all going to lose. You know, we cannot have a new Cold War and try to save the climate and the environment. And so I want to start today to, you know, to end this war and to build peace with the Russians, with the Ukrainians. And so that was my intention in going. And maybe just one other thing to add, it's also important for listeners to realize that the Canadian government has a travel advisory, a ban against going to Russia. So it says that Russia is you know, it's high-risk country, you know, it's dangerous, it's very difficult, you know, to travel there, to get money. And so I was also going to Russia in defiance of the Canadian government. I wanted to see for myself and to learn for myself about this country that we have really been, we have treated as an enemy. Like, my entire life, the Soviet Union and Russia have been treated as an enemy. And I don't want to participate in this construction of an enemy, this new Cold War, this new arms race. I want to end it, and I want to build peace immediately. So that's why I went to Russia.
Yeah. Well, I hope that sentiment crosses the country, because, you know, you mentioned this point. They've decided now that we are to regard Russia as an enemy. But I don't recall any debate discussion actually to make Russia, quote, an official enemy. All we've had are these edicts from various leaders, but there's been no discussion. By the way, it applies also, of course, in my view, I'm sure it does to you, to China. There are other countries that There isn't any discussion, actually. There's no hearings where all voices are heard, and yet the consequences of these arbitrary and executive decisions are extremely consequential, potentially, for the public of Canada.
Yes, Phil, there has not been a real political debate or a debate in our media about Canadian foreign policy, about what Canada has been doing in Ukraine for many years, Canada's involvement in the coup that ousted the democratically elected government of Yanukovych in 2014, Canada arming and training extremely violent ultranationalists in Ukraine for the past several years, and then Canada's sending of weapons and special forces on the ground in Ukraine, you know, fighting this war right now. And we never get the perspective of the Russian-speaking minority in the east of Ukraine. We are not being told, honestly, from the government or the media, what's really going on in Ukraine. And I just want to bring a resources to people's attention, and that is the really important book written by Stephen Cohen in 2019 called War with Russia, From Putin and Ukraine to Trump and Russiagate. I urge everybody who's listening to get a copy of this book and read it. It's very important. It's very prescient. Stephen Cohen was the leading expert on the Soviet Union mm-hmm. and Russia. He just passed away, and this book was an urgent warning that he wrote a couple of years ago, and it really is the important backstory for people to understand about what's going on in Ukraine. But Phil, if we have time, I would really love the opportunity to share some personal stories about sure. my time in Russia.
Well, that's, by the way, I have to tell you, you've entered special territory, because here we are, it's 2022, late December, and we're now in the situation that you describe, where it's like the Cold War revisited, where people don't visit. People don't go and just report what they saw and what they talked about. So please do.
Yeah. So when I was on the plane from Cairo to Moscow, I did, you know, experience some anxiety. I thought, geez, what have I got myself into? You know, my whole life, I've thought to my, you know, I've been told that, you know, Russia is an enemy, and I had these perceptions that mm-hmm. the Russian people would be unfriendly, unhelpful, aloof, and that you know, the city would be very, and the architecture would be very austere and you know, Soviet style, and yes. you know, and I
whatever
thought,
that
okay,
is.
Well. just very cold and unwelcoming. Like,
yes.
you know, that it was going to be a difficult challenge for me to be there, you know, that week. Mm-hmm. But right when I was on the plane, I tapped the young Russian man next to me, and I said, "Can you speak a little bit of English?" And he looked and he smiled and he said, "Yes, I actually can speak English quite well. I've been working for the United Nations for the past 7 years." And then he proceeded to tell me that he had been working for UN Peacekeeping Office, doing transport for UN officials by helicopter in Afghanistan, in Somalia, and in Mali. But because of the sanctions, the contract has ended, unfortunately. He's had to return to Siberia. And he's, you know, very, you know, sad about this. You know, this isn't something that he decided. You know, he was working on UN missions, right, trying mm-hmm. to be helpful. But anyways, he told me so much about Russia, and then he taught me some Russian words. Pasiba, thank you, and privet, hello. And then, you know, that you know, started to make me feel more comfortable. And then when I arrived into Moscow, the airport, you know, was modern, and the people were helpful, as I had to get a new SIM card, and I had to get a train into the city. The train is modern and fast, and the metro stations are beautiful, and they're so easy to navigate. All along the way, the mm-hmm. Russian people were kind and helpful and patient with me. I got to Moscow. The city is absolutely magnificent, a world-class city. I was so impressed with the beautiful architecture, how well-maintained their buildings are, the museums, the the statues, the restaurants, the cafes. It was absolutely awe-inspiring. I was so impressed. They have a great care and respect for their, you know, for their city and for their culture. I learned a tremendous amount. When I was there in Moscow, I had set up meetings before I arrived in Russia. I had reached out to people from all walks of life. I arranged to give a presentation at Mi'kmaq University, the most prestigious and biggest university on international relations in Russia. And I got an opportunity to meet with about 30, 40 master students. We had a great dialogue. There's a diversity of views about the conflict. They shared their perspectives. And I met with peace activists. I've met with feminists. I met with, I had meetings with people in the service industry. Mm-hmm. I talked to as many Russians as I could. I asked them, I used my translator on my phone. Many could speak English as well. And, you know, we had a great respectful dialogue, and they shared their perspective. And it was a tremendous experience. And then, after Moscow, I took a train up to St. Petersburg. And I have to tell you about this train, Phil. So this is the Sabsin train. It's a high-speed rail that goes between, you know, Moscow, St. Petersburg. It travels over 200 kilometers an hour. It was a three-hour train ride. And the comfort, the speed, the gourmet food on this train for $150, I couldn't believe it. Phil, I can't go from Kitchener to Ottawa in this kind of, on a train like this. Canada does not have 1 kilometer of high-speed rail. And in Russia, they have this high-speed rail all over the country. And in fact, it goes from Moscow, this particular train goes from Moscow to St. Petersburg 4 times a day. So over the past 20 years, Russia has modernized. They have invested in their public transit, in their housing, in their institutions, in their arts and cultural centers. It was really incredible. And in fact, it was one of the most beautiful countries that I have ever been in. And I have lived in Switzerland. I have lived and worked for actually the Department of Foreign Affairs in Norway. I lived for 2 years in the United Kingdom. I've lived in Japan. I lived in the United States. I've lived in many countries. I've traveled extensively. And I have to say, Russia was an incredible country, and I cannot wait to go back and take my husband and my children. And I think that the Canadian government and the Canadian media don't want Canadians to know how incredible this country is, how nice the people are, how beautiful the arts and cultural institutions are, the universities. And I urge Canadians to exercise their right to go to Russia, to make friends, to let's find ways to end this war, to make friends with Russia, because we need to cooperate with Russia on all of our big global challenges.
I hadn't realized the high speed train between Moscow and St. Petersburg. I'm really glad you raised it. By the way, my understanding is historically St. Petersburg is supposed to be sort of the jewel, but your description of Moscow is a positive place. It's not just a government town.
It was absolutely phenomenal. The cafes, the restaurants, the parks, the walkways, the gorgeous architecture, the museums, the galleries, the shopping. It was just stunning. I didn't expect this, Phil. It was so fantastic, and I was so impressed. And in fact, Russians told me, because I said to them, I only have time to go to Moscow and St. Petersburg, but they said, there are so many other beautiful cities. You have to go here and here and here. And they gave me a big list of other cities and towns to go to. They did also say that there, you know, there is poverty in the countries. They said, you know, there are many rural towns that are struggling. There are, you know, class issues there. You know, it's not a perfect country. I'm not saying that, but I didn't expect it to be as wonderful as it was.
You didn't find them miserable and oppressed and wishing to be liberated by NATO.
No, and I didn't expect the people to be so kind, as welcoming as they were. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we had open, honest debates with people. You know, there were people that told me privately, Tamara, you know, we cannot go onto the streets and protest. There is a limiting of, you know, dissent mm-hmm. and debate at the universities and in the workplaces. And, you know, we do have to be careful. So they did tell me that. But they also told me about their perspective on the war in Ukraine. You know, many of them are supportive of what the Russian government is doing, and they call it a special military operation. They say that their loved ones, many of them have family and friends in the east of and south of Ukraine, in the Donbass region.
Yes,
the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic. And they said, you know, for 8 years, their loved ones have been shot at and shelled by the NATO-backed Ukrainian security forces. One woman told me her mother's best friend was shot by a Ukrainian sniper in the head and killed. Others told me that their family and friends have lost their houses and their communities to the shelling by the Ukrainian mm-hmm. military. And this has been going on for 8 years. So they see this as not only...
Yes, it's not just now. It goes back to 2014.
For 2014, for 8 years. And this is what we aren't being told by the Canadian government and by the Canadian media, is that it's been going on for the long time, and that not only do they see this as a NATO-backed Ukrainian war against the Russian-speaking minority, the Ukraine in the east, but they also see this as a war by NATO against Russia. Mm-hmm. And I think that if people really do investigation, like if they read this book by Stephen Cohen, War with Russia, or if they look at this RAND Corporation report, this is a Pentagon think tank, in 2019 it came out with a report called Overextending and Unbalancing Russia. If they look at that, they can see that, yes. You know, NATO and the West have been wanting to oppress, suppress, repress Russia, because Russia has been doing well. Over the past 20 years, their economy has been improving. This is evident from World Bank statistics, and this is evident from what I saw on the ground. And mm-hmm. the West does not want Russia to be a great superpower that challenges American, Western, NATO hegemony. And that's what really is going on. So we need to work hard in Canada to get our government to stop sending weapons, to negotiate an end to this war, and we need to start making friends with Russians, with Ukrainians, with the Chinese, and to work on the climate crisis,
sure.
To work on the poverty crisis.
By the way,
crisis.
On that point, I mean, that strikes me is it it's a popular way to get votes and to say, well, they care, and we hear from our leaders in the U.S. and Canada, why the climate's number one, and we all have to. But, you know, obviously that involves international cooperation. And if you're going to start building walls and insulting and threatening other states, there's no way anybody's going to have any climate agreement. As a matter of fact, all the anti-climate people, those who really want to just, you know, dig up the coal and the oil, et cetera, they like this new Cold War because nobody's going to ask them any questions. They just give me as much of that as you've got, which is going to make the climate much worse.
Phil, you're absolutely right. There is no way that we can succeed on averting catastrophic climate change if we don't partner with Russia and China. And what is so dangerous right now is with this NATO expansion and with this NATO-backed war in Ukraine, is that this carbon-intensive militarism is exacerbating the climate crisis. You know, we are sending fighter jets. When I was in Romania, Canada had a fleet of CF-18s there. We've got fighter jets and warships and tanks. All of this is fossil fuel powered. All of this is making the climate crisis worse. And then the other thing is all of our NATO countries, including Canada, have dramatically increased military spending,
yes,
which is diverting precious public funds away from action on climate change into war and weapons. And so this is why I want to end this conflict in Ukraine. I want to end this new Cold War with Russia and with China so desperately, and why I went to Russia to try to find, you know, ways to start building peace.
Yes. I want to ask you about that. I mean, we need treaties. We need leaders who are big enough to sit down and talk, and rather than this posturing, that strikes me as, you know, what you've been addressing. I mean, here we have a prime minister of our country. He doesn't pick up the phone to talk to or try to speak to the leader of Russia. Meanwhile, Germany does, France does, but the Canadian Prime Minister can't engage? Is he not allowed? Is he has to ask permission from somebody?
And you know, ironically, Phil, 40 years ago, Justin Trudeau's father, who was our Prime Minister at the time, mm-hmm, right, Pierre Trudeau, actually went to Moscow to try to have a peace plan. He went to a number of capitals on a peace mission to try, mm-hmm, to end the Cold War, to try to end the nuclear arms race. And, you know, our prime minister
He acted like
now,
a leader of Canada.
He acted like a leader. And he was also showing great independence as well. Mm-hmm. And this is not what's happening right now. Canada, we are getting our marching orders from the U.S., from Washington, from the Biden administration. We don't have an independent foreign policy. We're doing what the United States and what NATO is, you know, is telling us to do. But we in the peace movement in Canada, we have been trying to put pressure on the Canadian government to stop sending weapons to Ukraine, to call for a ceasefire, to call for negotiations for a political resolution. You know, we're continuing to do that. And we're also, which is really so important, is we are, you know, we're building a movement against NATO. NATO is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. We need to abolish NATO. We need to scale it back. Right now, Phil, we've got thousands and thousands of soldiers right along Russia's borders. We've got fighter jets. We've got tanks. We've got, you know, you know, battle groups on their borders. It's very dangerous. What is taking place, and the Russians are scared. The Russians are worried. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do here at home.
They haven't put their forces along our borders, which we would hear a lot about if they were to do so. By the way, I tell our listeners, this is Tamara Lorenz, and it's LORINCZ, and there's a Tamara has a Twitter account. I urge everybody to go there. And Tamara, tell us about some organizations people could go to their sites and follow you, actually.
So I would really encourage people to get involved with the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network. They can go to the website peaceandjusticenetwork.ca. They can also get involved in a number of local peace organizations across the country, like the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace, the mm-hmm. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Canada, the Montreal Chapter of World Beyond War. And I would also like to bring to your listeners' attention that the International Peace Bureau has a petition calling for a ceasefire. They can go to the IPB website, mm-hmm. ipb.org, and sign the petition calling for a Christmas truce, an end to this war in Ukraine, and for peace. So there's ways for people to get involved.
Yeah.
Please contact, you know, your member of parliament and say you want Canada to stop sending weapons and you want Canada to be a leader on peace and disarmament, to have an independent foreign policy, and to withdraw from NATO.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, it's Tamara Lorenz. And Tamara, additionally, our problem is to me, it's one of the reasons we need citizen involvement and initiative and people-to-people peace work is that we are supposed to have opposition parties. They don't ask minimum reasonable questions. How deeply are we getting involved? How many weapons? Why this money is spent here and not over here? And why isn't Canada one of the leading voices to help end the conflict? But I'm not hearing anything from the so-called opposition parties.
I agree with you, Phil. It's really disappointing. There is no political opposition. There is no political courage from the other political parties, particularly from the NDP and from the Greens.
I listen to them. Sometimes they seem to be more of a war hawk than the Liberals. Some of the things they say curl your hair.
Yes, actually, just before I left, to Egypt, to this big tour in Russia and Eastern Europe, I was actually in Ottawa for a conference, and I talked with the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, and also with the NDP whip, Alexandre Bolloris, about this. And I said to them, why aren't they calling for peace and ceasefire? Why are they supporting the Trudeau government sending mm-hmm. weapons to Ukraine? And they said that, we need to defeat Putin. We need to defeat Russia. And, this is extremely dangerous. The opposition has not called for any oversight, for instance, of all of the weapons that were sending.
And they don't ask about the Minsk agreements, which we really helps us focus. Germany and France promised that they were going to work with the Ukrainian government, which also promised that they were going to try to have an arrangement which would bring autonomy and protection of the Russian language to Donbass. And that was just thrown in the garbage can. You would think the NDP would at least raise its little hand and say, shouldn't we look at that as a way to solve this?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, Phil. I'm really shocked and angry that the NDP and the Greens haven't made peace a top priority, because it's having this war in Ukraine, this war with Russia, is having an adverse impact on everything. It's causing inflation in Canada. It's making Canadians it's making it more difficult for Canadians to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. The whole world is suffering from this. There's greater food insecurity in Africa because of it. Mm-hmm. The climate change is worsening. We aren't getting good agreements out of COP27 in Egypt or at COP15 right now on biodiversity in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Poverty is getting worse. Mm-hmm.
And the solution would be more cooperation.
Absolutely. End this war. We need peace.
Sign a few treaties. By the way, have you noticed, I was struck that the foreign minister of India, he says, why is it the Europeans can't create an architecture, a diplomatic architecture to resolve their differences? It's as if we are very backward compared to the developing countries.
Well, there was this architecture, and this is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE. It was created mm-hmm. in 1975 out of the Helsinki Act. And so Finland, which was a neutral country, helped bring about this new infrastructure that was a security architecture for all European countries, and it included
it's
Russia. The
mutual.
Problem is, the problem is the European countries were not adequately investing and supporting the OSCE. Instead, there has been so much money and support for NATO and this expansion over the past 23 years from 1999 until today, this NATO expansion, this militarization of Europe, and it caused this circumventing and undermining of the OSCE. So the OSCE now is not functioning the way it is supposed to. It was supposed to bring about security and cooperation between Europe and Russia. Mm-hmm. But the West doesn't want
NATO is eating that organization. Didn't they recently, some Russian emissary was to attend a meeting in Poland. Poland wouldn't give him a visa to come?
Yes.
I mean,
yes, that's right.
That's an organization they're all members of. It's like NATO is sneaking in the back door and eating it up.
That's right. And NATO needs an enemy, right? So they have resurrected, well, it was the Soviet Union, now Russia. You know, as this new enemy, they're also constructing, China as an enemy. Yep. NATO is globalizing, it's militarizing not only Europe but the entire world. Mm-hmm. And we have leveled the unprecedented, the worst sanctions against Russia, against any country ever. So now Russians are isolated. It's collective punishment against the Russian people. Mm-hmm. Russians cannot easily leave the country. They can't attend peace conferences in Europe. So I met a peace activist who's been working on Baltic Sea cooperation, right, between Finland, Russia, mm-hmm. and the Baltic states. And now he's not able to he wasn't able to travel recently to Paris to attend a peace conference because he can't leave Russia and get into Europe easily. So, the Russian people don't want this. They want an end to this war. They want friendship and solidarity with other countries. And the war will end when President Biden, picks up the phone and says to Zelensky, "Okay, let's end this." Right. And now we need to, as Canadians, put pressure on our government to say this is we want peace. We want to end this war. And Phil, if there's time, I would love to talk quickly about the NATO foreign ministers meeting in Bucharest, Romania. That was the end of my trip.
Please.
I would love to say a few words about that.
Yes, if you
possible.
Would.
So, well, just to let people know that. After Russia, I went to Finland, and then I went to Latvia. I went to go and see Canada's NATO base there, just outside of Riga. And then I went to Poland, and then I ended up in Romania. And I timed the end of my trip to coincide with the NATO foreign ministers meeting in Bucharest. And it was my first time in the capital of Romania. And I stayed at a hotel that was just across the street from the parliamentary palace where the NATO meeting was taking place. And the night before the meeting, I walked all around the city. I walked all around and I noticed that there were NATO flags and NATO billboards all around the capital saying, "We are NATO, promoting NATO," right across from where the meeting was taking place is the big Department of Defense. And on the main street was this big, big statue of NATO. I also noticed that where the foreign ministers were meeting was at the most luxurious hotel in Bucharest. And it was, it was the Marriott, and they took us, there was police all around this hotel. There was police and security officials all around the parliamentary palace. And our foreign affairs minister Melanie Joly and the other foreign affairs ministers of the 30 NATO countries would be shuttled between this hotel into the parliamentary palace for these two-day meetings. I looked around Bucharest. I scheduled meetings and I was talking with people from all walks of life, and Phil, I was so shocked and saddened by the state of disrepair and despair in Bucharest. So while our foreign affairs minister was wining and dining with her counterparts in the parliamentary palace, the people of Romania are really impoverished, are really in despair. The infrastructure is crumbling. The cladding of the of the apartment building, of the shops were just falling apart. Things were very dilapidated. And it was really very sad. There was people that were homeless, a lot of poverty, a lot of people suffering with addiction and alcoholism in the street. And I talked to people who were telling me that poverty is getting worse, the economy is getting worse, corruption is getting worse. And you know, it was really very sad. And the thing that I was so troubled by was in the middle of this NATO meeting, the president of Romania, Klaus Iohannis, made an announcement that Romania is going to increase their military spending from 2% of GDP to 2.5% of GDP. So over the past 7 years, Phil, military spending in Romania has gone from about 8 billion Romanian lus to 26 billion Romanian lus, and it's going to go up even
price
higher.
Price of membership.
So they are draining the public funds for this militarism, for NATO, when the people are suffering. They are not investing in the social welfare, in the infrastructure that the people desperately need. So this is what is happening to Romania, is what is happening to other NATO countries.
Yes.
This American Western capitalism and militarism from NATO is sucking Romania dry, and it's happening to all of our countries. So we need to work together to stop NATO. That is the lesson that I learned in Romania. I tried to protest outside the NATO summit or the NATO meeting. I had a big sign that said no to NATO, yes to peace and cooperation, but the police immediately stopped me and detained me. But I tried to bring my message of peace and cooperation throughout my tour of Russia and Eastern Europe.
Well, I think you did it. And you're one of the bravest anti-war people I know. Your work has been terrific, Tamara. I hope that everyone will follow it and read the book by Stephen Cohen, as you recommend. But also, just people have to learn to be active citizens in the manner that you are. And we look forward to talking to you more in detail about all these subjects, because you have all the information we need to hear. Thanks very, very much.
Thank you so much, Phil, for having me. And I just want to encourage people to be courageous, be creative. We desperately need peace and cooperation. So let's work together on that.
We definitely will. Thank you very much, Tamara.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.